Welcome, citizens. You're listening to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Here, thinkers and doers always have a key to the city. The mayor is in, so office hours start now.
What's going on, citizens? Spring has sprung and all that jazz. Welcome to another edition of New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives, thinkers, and doers. Flobo Boys here, in the mayor's office, handling things, I suppose. As the days get longer, I feel like my work day has gotten longer as well. Not sure if I like the sunsets early or later. No, I take that back. I love the later sunset. I just wish I wasn't stuck in my office doing that. Some transitions are happening to the show over the next couple months. A lot of them are out of my hands. As full disclosure, this podcast, New Amsterdam Radio, is an Anchor podcast. And Anchor became Spotify for podcasters. And looks like Spotify is integrating the tools into another new console. So this show will be looking and sounding different over the next couple of weeks. And I'm not sure if this is the end of the beginning or just business as usual. It's hard to say, but you'll notice as it continues that things will be different as it is right now. Maybe I might just decide to drop Anchor somewhere else. I haven't really decided about that. Anyway, this episode, and all the other episodes, is brought to you in part by SeatGeek. You see, when I'm not recording podcasts or lamenting about the pages and who runs them, I'm always going to events around town. We're talking about like sporting events, monster truck rallies, concerts, and more. And SeatGeek is the key I need to get the best seats at the right price. Now, here's the deal. Nobody wants to pay a whole lot, and SeatGeek's going to do you a favor. Use promo code FLOBITO, that's me, FLOBITO, for $20 off your first order. That's right. SeatGeek, FLOBITO, match made in heaven. Speaking of matches, I had a chance to talk to my guest this week from a matching service. In fact, a lot of times my podcast guest comes from my DMs or a friend of a friend, but this one was kind of like something I came across through a matching service. She was looking to be on some more podcasts, and I was looking to know more about her. Anna Visnecki is a expert in crisis response, disaster response, and crisis management, former Coast Guard of the United States. She has worked with such clients as AWS. So they really sit down and talk to her about what kind of work she got into, how she got into that sort of thing, and why she's called upon today with some of her clients as she started her own brand called Merewolf. So you may enjoy that if you're looking for more of the launching your own consulting business after doing the corporate thing and has that at all. So without any further ado, here's my chat with Anna Visnecki. Welcome back to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. It is I, the mayor, Flobo Boys, in the mayor's office, hanging with people who are doing things that are spectacular. As I record this, the springtime is here, and I always wanted to know how deep the show can go, because people come from all different walks of life, and when I came across this individual's background, I was like a head exploding emoji. You know what I'm talking about? Please welcome Anna Visnecki to the show. She is in the whole realm of, can I say this right, disaster response management?
Yeah, disaster. We also call it crisis response management. Okay. So the disasters were more when I was in the Coast Guard. So my first disaster response was Hurricane Katrina. Barely had my commission. God, I hadn't even had it a full year yet when I got deployed to Katrina. And it was, you want to talk about surreal. It was like stepping into a movie, and not a good movie. But yeah, so I do a lot of disaster response, but right now a lot of my focus is more what we would actually call crisis management and crisis response for specifically the video game and tabletop game industries.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Well, you talk about crisis in video games. Usually I'm thinking about like what happened with Overwatch with McCree. What exactly does that mean?
That is part of it. Yeah, that is definitely a part of it. The McCree situation, all the layoffs that are happening. The industry has been nailed by layoffs, sure. Doxing and swatting, which is where someone leaks someone's information or calls a SWAT team to their house. Swatting is something that's been going on in the game industry for quite a while. We're seeing right now a resurgence of people trying to relaunch Gamergate, which happened about 10 years ago, which was the systematic harassment of women, people of color, people in the LGBTQ plus community, and basically doxing them, harassing them, sending them threatening things, trying to get them fired from their jobs. We're seeing a resurgence of an attempt to do that. Sure. There's all sorts of stuff that happens.
Yeah, I know this is not a gaming podcast, but just kidding. Roll with me here. So I'm a shoutcaster myself. My game of choice is Rocket League. And I got in at a very
game's hard.
There's nothing to relate to. Yeah, it's so hard, but I'm a better caster than I'm a player. Hands down. And so I got a lot of opportunities in 2020 as a person of color, as a caster of color. Is that a weird thing to say?
Sure, why not?
Do the fallout of our racial strife here in the country. But I've seen firsthand that the women who essentially have come after I came into Rocket League to cast are getting just so much pulled apart and having these document incidents and having these kind of harassment things. And it's kind of a sad that you kind of thought that Gamergate was done, but it's never done, you know?
No, I mean, it was never fully over. It stopped for the most part, but the harassment of women in the gaming space is constant. It's never gone away. And it's something that, interestingly enough, if you could look it up, the Bungie organization, Bungie actually won a lawsuit against a troll, against someone who was doing racially based harassment. What that set precedent for, though, is that now employees can say, hey, similar to how as a firefighter or someone working like your dad did for the trains, if I'm injured on the job, the company needs to protect me. There's safety regulations.
Yeah.
Well, the Bungie case actually set precedent that there is precedent that employers in the game industry are responsible to protect their people's safety. Oh, that means from harassment and from doxing. So it's changing. The industry is changing on how it was, largely because of that precedent that was set, that they basically view the harassment and like this person had shit sent to their house, all sorts of stuff. Well, what's great about this Bungie case is it set the precedent that just like when your dad was working on those trains, the company was responsible for his safety. Companies like Microsoft and Sony and all these big game producers are responsible for the safety of the people engaging as employees with their company.
Whoa, that's cool. Monumental. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because I know a lot of times with the whole idea of concept of remote work and these giant corporations being like, you're right, who's looking out for me? And it's kind of cool that some protections are there.
Well, it's going to make me sound old, but this kind of goes back to how I got into what I do. I was an early adopter of LiveJournal in the 90s when I was in
college. Me too! Let's go! Me and George R. R. Martin just hanging out there.
Right? Right? I'm pretty sure he's the only one who still uses it. But I've always been kind of an early adopter of online digital technologies. And I met my best friend, Brandon, we've been BFFs for almost 30 years now because we met when we were 14 playing BattleNet. We were playing Diablo.
Nice.
And there's been this long running change in they're not real life. Remember how everyone's like, okay, but do you have real life friends? You know, do you have real world friends? Well, we do so much digitally now that you cannot separate our digital presence from our physical personal presence. And so one of the things that I did was I actually launched the Coast Guard social media program. And I was the first blogger for the service because my attitude was digital is going to, it was one of those either you get involved or you get left behind.
Right.
One of the things that included was having to work with the flag staff, the admirals and stuff, to develop new policies around what happens. Like we had one woman who was used in some advertising, beautiful young pilot. And she, gorgeous woman. She was being used to show that, hey, we've got women pilots. Well, of course, they took the images of her and it ended up on 4chan and something else.
Oh,
and comments were disgusting. And she was getting harassed because you could figure out what unit she was from. The unit started getting gross mail, all sorts of stuff. So we had to develop these policies of what the hell do you do? Because not feeding the trolls is one thing. But when the trolls have started mailing used underwear and stuff to a unit, what do you do?
Right.
So I've been involved in kind of this sort of online digital crisis management, how to help people since it started.
Can I take a step back and ask, was that the dream as a kid to help people? It was a diet that you want to be a doctor?
I'm third generation.
Okay.
I'm a third generation Coastie. So okay. My grandfather.
I can't say that word. Chief. I know you can. I know.
Yeah. No. Coastie. Coastie is what we are commonly called.
Right.
My grandfather was a senior chief and my dad retired as the captain of the Coast Guard cutter Healy, the big icebreaker. So going into the Coast Guard was kind of the family business, and this idea of helping save lives and work with the environment was a big deal to me personally. Yeah. So that's why I joined the Coast Guard. And when I was in, it just so happened that I was pulled into Hurricane Katrina, and I realized that my sweet spot, like where I excelled and where I was really good, was using emerging technologies to help with communications and translating between the two groups, like taking what the Coast Guard was trying to say and making sure the public understood it. So I found this weird little niche that I joke that because of my ADHD, I never panic. I sure. can never focus either, but I never panic. It's a balancing act.
It's a balance, yeah.
But yeah, so I ended up, that's how I ended up doing this.
Okay. So I've heard from my other friends mm-hmm. who were in the service that like the Coast Guard is kind of like the ignored branch. Like there's a chip on your shoulder because you don't get the glory, like the glory, but yeah. the praise. Is that yep. your thing or no?
Oh gosh. Yeah. It was ironic. I found some video recently. Because, you know, again, old. I was going through a box and I found a disc, like a CD with some original Katrina video that we pulled off the disc. It is low res, all the things from 2005, right?
Sure.
But I went and was looking online to see if this video had existed. Not only does this video not exist anywhere, it's not been archived, but Britannica doesn't really mention the Coast Guard. Wikipedia barely mentions the Coast Guard. You know, if you watch the bridge collapse that just happened, the mm-hmm. lead federal agency responding is the U.S. Coast Guard.
Wow.
The bridge collapse was like, and I was the lead public information officer for the Minneapolis bridge collapse in 2007.
Right, right.
When there was a collision on the Mississippi, the Tintamarra Mel Oliver, I was the lead PIO for that as well, that shut down the Mississippi for almost a week. These are Coasties that are responding. But my dad and I were laughing that watching CNN, General Honoré, who's been out forever and has nothing to do with waterways or bridges, was on CNN. Mm. They had Navy captains. They had Navy admirals. The Navy has nothing to right. do with this response. Why they didn't have a single Coastie there to talk about it? Because like I was on Threads and Blue Sky, as well as LinkedIn, going, hey, time out. Here's what's probably going on. Here's what you saw. And I have responded to multiple of these. And, you know, I got a lot of reach through that, but it was astonishing that most of the major networks didn't talk to a single Coast Guard expert.
Wow. Yeah. It's kind of surreal that you think about it, but yeah, respect mm-hmm. and thank you for your service. You know?
Yeah. Well, I never know what to say when people say that, like I loved it. And sometimes
no, thank you. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I joke that sometimes I feel like I was kicked out of the Justice League. And I think that's another reason why I went on to create my own company was when I left the Coast Guard, I went to AWS and I loved my time there. I still have very close friends from AWS. Mm-hmm. I ended up as the head of launch operations, which was like organizing the most chaotic, always on fire port of operations you've ever seen. And when they figured out I didn't panic when things were on fire, I actually ended up as the principal for global disaster response. So that meant I was actually doing disaster response using AWS products, but also helping Andy Jassy, the CEO at the time, respond to COVID itself.
Right.
So it was, you know, but that's when I really realized that I missed helping people through a crisis, that my unique combination of technology, like I'm very well versed in AI, I'm very well versed in the cloud, all of these things, plus my experience responding to things like Hurricane Katrina. I've responded to everything from homicides, plane crashes, as I mentioned, bridge collapses,
right.
nuclear power plant issues, personnel issues. I've responded to all of it. Plus I have this experience with tech and gaming because I've done a lot of consulting work in gaming. Right. And I was like, you know, I could go back to helping people. I could get back to my roots of focusing on crisis management and helping people when things get rough, being that lighthouse. And that's what I decided to do.
So let's talk about that. Not so much like your time at AWS or is it Oracle as well?
Oracle. Yeah, is it Oracle?
But the jump into your own firm, is it Merriwith? What was that like? What was that moment like? Was it a napkin moment in a diner going, yeah? Was it you got called to a new Justice League? What's the deal?
It was as I was, so right between Oracle and AWS, I did a brief stint at an AI startup. And they were, even though I was the senior director of PR and community, I was constantly being asked to do things with my crisis and disaster background for AI. Mm-hmm. And that's when my friend Corey Quinn, who's from Last Week in AWS, he's a pretty big influencer in the cloud space. He's like, damn it, would you just start your own company? Because I need your help on a few things and I want to be able to pay you. He's like, you're constantly helping me out on the side just as my friend, but I want to be able to actually bring you in on stuff and pay you. Can you just become a... And so while I was at that AI startup, I actually started Merriwith largely so that my friend who was on my ass constantly about it could pay me. And then the name Merriwith is actually, it means sea witch. It's Old English for like mermaid or sea witch. And the reason I chose that was one, the Coast Guard background, and I've spent my whole life by the water. But the other interesting thing is in stories, the mermaid either saves the sailors or sinks the ships. And I thought that was a hilarious duality.
Not to mention
it. And it kind of plays into what I do. I either help you or I can help you sink a ship. So, you know, it's like one of those things. So, it kind of came out of that. And then when I decided to leave the startup, I was doing it full time and I ended up like jumping aboard to help Bungie when they had an article coming out. And then while I was at Oracle, because I was already kind of starting to think about just going on my own, I left it open and I actually ended up being the crisis manager that Wizards of the Coast called in to fix the OGL situation last January. That's the open gaming license situation. People can Google it. It was a mess, but I have a deep love for the D&D community and the D&D team. So that was a really great thing to participate in and help with. So when I left Oracle, I was like, you know what? I got a book coming out. I've got a couple clients already lined up. Let's go for it. And so I've been doing it full time since, and it's been going very well, including hiring another consultant and an office manager because I can't keep track of my invoices.
Wow. Well, not to derail the show entirely, but I've never played D&D myself. I've kind of like, I stand in like the corner and watch people play and then heckle, like more like lame master. Like I'm always the worst when it comes to that. I've never played myself. That's pretty cool that you're able to tell you it was such an institution as well. And so you're saying you're actually growing. How does employee number one look like? Was that nerve-wracking for a small business owner to be like, I trust you with other stuff?
Well, I lucked out in the sense that the first contractor I brought aboard is, his nickname's Mac, everyone, Thomas McKenzie. Mac and I worked together in the Coast Guard. So we worked on the BP oil spill together. He worked for me briefly at AWS. So like we have a history. So it wasn't that hard to bring him aboard and be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. You're a big nerd like me. You know this space really well too. I need some backup because as I take on retainers, that's 24-hour coverage. Like one of the things with crisis management is we are 24-hour coverage. So you can call me at 2 a.m. if you are one of my people on retainer. There's a reason we only take a couple of these. You can call me at 2 a.m. and be like, one of our trucks just crashed and I am up and I am running your response. Right. So I needed a backup so that, you know, I can take vacations occasionally, maybe sleep. But also it's for my customers so that they have a good rotation of like knowing that it is 24 hours. So it wasn't really that hard. The hardest part was like figuring out pay scales. Like, how do I pay this person? How do I make sure that, you know, how are we arranging this and all that stuff? And luckily I have a couple friends who've started their own businesses who helped walk me through that. Yeah. And then I'm in the Women's Organization Chief, which is the Chief Executive Network. It's for women executives. And so I happen to have a friend that's a lawyer through there. So I hired her to help me do a lot of the paperwork. So a lot of it's networking and figuring out like, what the heck am I doing now?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, a lot of times we are like feast or famine and sometimes you have months without stretches of work and it's months where there's like not too much work, but it's like no time in the day to get the work done. And I was like, what was your method? If you have one, it's okay. If you don't, it's also okay of like managing that balance of feast or famine with your own mental health.
I will say I, so first of all, the feast or famine thing, I will say I come from a position of extreme privilege. We need to identify that right away. Okay. Not only am I a white woman, as opposed to anyone else trying to do this sort of thing, but I also was a VP at Oracle. So when I left, I had a massive stock influx. So I had the stock basically to cover a year's worth of pay. Sure. So I knew that if I didn't get paid for 6 to 9 months from my customers, I'd still be okay. Plus we're a dual income house. And my husband is also an executive. So I need to call that out right there. I can do this like with less stress than the average person due to my privilege.
Okay. Thank you.
But a lot of it is, I've taken a lot of classes, a lot of business, like how to start a business class. I've done a lot of networking. I've looked for other people who are like me, who've started their own business. And I'll reach out to them and go, am I crazy? Or is this like, why do I feel like I'm a giant failure?
Right.
Because part of bringing on my consultant was I couldn't take on retainers until I had a consultant. So I had to have someone who was willing to understand that he was coming aboard so that we could get the retainers, not immediately you're going to be paid. And luckily he's got a retirement. So there I lucked out too. And I also luck out that I've got like 3 more friends from the Coast Guard who are either retired or retiring and are like, we want to join you. And I'm like, yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways I've been super lucky, but for the planning part of it is, especially because my business is so feast or famine, like all of a sudden I will have 3 clients and everything's on fire and I've made $400,000, or I'm hanging out kind of, you know, doing my thing. Well, part of what I did was I decided to write a book.
Okay.
So I started that a year ago. It actually, the digital version should be available at the end of this month. Its title is Fuck It, Watch This. Because, you know, I'm a bit irreverent on everything I do.
Absolutely.
So it's a unconventional leadership book. It's a no nonsense, because I hate the fluffy thought leadership.
Yeah.
And like, if the majority of military leadership books drive me nuts, because I'm like, that's not how we did it at all. That's just a bunch of fluffy nonsense.
Yeah.
And so many leadership books to me don't give you actions. They're like, you need to think about it like you're a fluffy cloud and that you're drizzling down upon your people. You're not. No.
Uh-uh. Right.
So what I did instead was I wrote it from, it's kind of comedic. I tell a lot of stories of stuff I learned in the Coast Guard and that the Coast Guard didn't necessarily mean to teach me. Right. I even joke in the intro that if I don't piss off at least 4 admirals, I didn't write the book the right way. But one of the things I decided to do to help my business was write a book, because that will, one, give me some passive income with the royalties, but 2, it also gets my style, my personality, my experience out there in the world, so that someone who might want to work with me or hire me, because I do a lot of paid speaking, might be able to see and hear a little bit more of my voice and how I do things. So that was part of my plan. So that's coming out. I also have a book kickstarting at the end of July called Oh No's, a picture book for execs. And that one is literally a crisis communications book written in the style of a children's book. It follows Phil of Nilicone Valley as he messes up every step of his ice cream company's crisis. And it's got art and it's colorful and you can read it to your kids, but it's literally intended for executives. So I'm doing some of those things on the side to garner some of that passive income. But then the other thing is I really focused hard on retainers, mm-hmm. because those retainers are what's going to kind of keep us fed throughout the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are the things that I focused on.
So you're basically confirming now this book coming out in the spring will have no fluffy cloud conjecture. That's what's
new. New. It is anti-fluffy bullshit. My mom's a little concerned with how much I cuss in it.
Yeah, moms always do that though.
There's a chapter that's called Be a Maverick, Not a Dipshit.
Yeah.
In each chapter, I actually outline at the end of each chapter, there's questions to ask yourself and steps to take to do things. Like I talk about getting promotions. And so this isn't actually crisis management. This is kind of a career as a whole book. And I talk about like how you should have a yay folder, which is where you capture every time you complete an awesome task and someone's like, thank you for this, throw it in there. Two reasons. One, helps with promotions. Two, on your shitty days, you can go and look and go, hey, people do occasionally like me. Yeah. And then the second folder I jokingly call the Steve folder. And that's because it originated because there was a guy at AWS, and he knows this, he thinks it's funny, that was driving me nuts. And every time his name showed up in my inbox, I wanted to light him on fire. Like I just, my blood pressure would go through the roof the moment I saw his email. You know that guy to email. You know that person. Everyone has that person.
Marks everything urgent. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Shows up in your inbox and you're like, oh, fuck, I need whiskey in my coffee. Right. So I called it the Steve folder and auto had every one of his emails go into this folder so that I could open it when I was mentally prepared to deal with his shit. Well, he and I eventually worked out our issues and it was just a communication thing. And, but that folder became the place where I put all my cover your ass emails.
Right.
But no one looking over my shoulder could see a CYA folder. Cause you don't necessarily want to have a CYA folder or a these people are assholes folder. Right. So I just left it named Steve. And even now running my own company, I have a Steve folder. And so in the book, I talk about why you should do these and that they should be set up kind of like people with ADHD call them doom drawers, where it's a drawer where you just pull open and throw stuff you know you're going to need, but you have no idea where else to put it and you shut the drawer.
Oh, that's the name for it? I had no idea.
It's a doom drawer. And so these are like doom folders, basically. So the book actually goes through like tacticals on how to do these things, not just because let me tell you, in the Coast Guard, man, we read probably 13 to 20 leadership books a year.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah, they had lots of leadership training.
Right, right.
The which is good. 1 minute manager. 1 minute manager, tipping point, like you name it. We read. Who moved my cheese is another one.
They're around when I were kids.
And they're useful. They're useful. Don't get me wrong. Like one of the things I wish the corporate world would do more of is the leadership training the military does. Like when you get promoted to manager at Amazon or at Oracle and stuff like that, there's very limited resources in teaching you how to do that. And I don't think a lot of managers realize when they get promoted to be a manager for the first time that people now rely on you. Their livelihood relies on you. There are studies to show that our health and well-being is deeply tied to our management. I talk about that in the book too. There's the five types, archetypes of managers. And I talk about those in the book as well. The narwhal, the seagull, the octopus, the orca, and the blue falcon. And I explain what they all are, but I explain how to survive them. But our mental health is so tied at work to if we have a good manager or not. And I wish the corporate world would give the training that like we had to go through in the Coast Guard. We went through leadership and management training annually in the Coast Guard.
It's true. There's people quit bad bosses, right? I'm with that 100%. I've had a couple jobs that paid very well, but a couple of managers that made it not worth it, right? Who needs $1 million paycheck with a banana headache?
I mean, at Oracle, at AWS in the book, I actually talk about a pivot point and how to decide if you need to quit your job or not.
Yeah.
And like the questions you need to ask yourself, because I quit AWS largely because of health problems, because I was driven into the ground. So yeah, it's tough. And I will say the thing for anyone who's going to run their own company, here's the toughest thing for me, especially if you are neurodivergent. We grow up in a system. You go to school, you know, you're going to school from 7 to 2 or whatever times, and you go to different classes and you have homework to turn in and people are telling you how to do the thing. You join the military. They tell you how to dress. They tell you when to go to the dentist. They tell you how to, you know, how to wear your hair, you know, work hours. They tell you where you're going to live, all of it. But when you go to the corporate world, it's the same thing. You have deadlines. You have, you know, your timelines. You've got your budget. You've got all of these things that are so set. When I pivoted to running my own company, the hardest thing for me and part of why I decided to get a business manager early on is because I struggle with not having a structure pre-built. I'm good at building structures and fixing problems, but executive dysfunction when you're neurodivergent is real. You know, used to drive my mom nuts. And in college, I was even worse about it. I'd do my paper the night before.
Wow.
You know, that sort of thing. So the fact that I now have to create my own business structure and that I found it's easier now that I'm creating it for three people, not just myself, but that is hard. When you go from the corporate world and being in school and being told what to do all the time and how to do things, starting your own business means you're making the decisions on how to do things and what timelines you're going to do and when things are due and what you're going to charge for stuff. And it is not easy.
Right.
That's the hardest part for me.
Yeah, I can totally get that. I know when I'm hanging out with my friends off the clock, I'm always like, man, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to eat, whatever you want to do, like, you never decide because I'm tired of signing all day.
Yep, exactly. Well, I'm going to Greece for 10 days with my girlfriends.
Oh,
and
nice.
My one friend and my best friend, she goes, we're just going to do a tour company because none of the three of us want to make decisions on where we're staying, what boats to take, all of that. We're just going to let... I honestly don't, other than Athens and ending in Santorini, I have no idea what the middle of the trip is. I'm just going.
Yeah. I did Japan the same way. I was like, here's my money. Make sure I have a good time.
Make sure I have a good time and that I don't get lost. We're good.
Right. Well, you know, everyone who's our guest on the show, we kind of ask them kind of like these quick lightning round department questions down to play.
Okay.
Let's do this. What is the best part of your hometown?
The summers.
Oh, and that is what town?
Seattle. Sorry, oh, Seattle nice. Summers. Nice. Seattle summers are to die for. They are perfect.
I've been to Seattle once. It was last April, and it did rain. So I kind of saw it coming. I did not see the summer in Seattle.
We turn the rain on anytime someone from California comes up. Like we
have I know
a that just turns it on to make sure that you know y'all stop moving here. So
you know what I learned. You know what I learned about being in Seattle is that I was in my hotel. I was looking outside. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell if it was raining, and I looked outside. I go, oh wait, no umbrellas. It must be dry. Well, no one owns umbrellas in Seattle. Just everything is waterproof. I just
I own an umbrella for when I travel. I have a tiny travel umbrella, but I do not ever carry it here in Seattle.
Oh man.
We all have gills.
Yeah. Besides Greece, what is on your travel bucket list?
I haven't been to Thailand yet. It's a big one. But my biggest thing is by the time I'm 50, I want to have been on every continent. And so I am just missing South America and Africa at this point. That's
wow.
It.
Well, how's that article? So, is it overrated?
I lived there for almost a year right out
so
of
So it
college.
Is overrated. No nightlife. Downtown sucks.
Well, actually, there's two bars in McMurdo. Hey. The smoking bar and the non-smoking bar. No, So next year for our fifth anniversary, like my husband and I have been talking about like going to Peru or something so we can knock that one out. And then, so yeah, my biggest bucket goal is I still need to hit South America and Africa so I can hit head on every continent.
Side question. Are you talking about like West Africa or Saharan Africa or like South
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I don't know yet. Like I like all of it. I'm fascinated by all of it. I want to try it all. So it's kind of, you know, do I want to see pyramids or do I want to see, you know, like elephants and lions or do I want to, you know, and the culture, like the buildings are beautiful in some of the areas and, you know, the food. And so, yeah, it's going to be a toss up.
Wow. Do you believe in days off? And if so, what do you do?
I definitely believe in days off. I actually was almost borderline neurotic about it as a manager. As the VP at my last company at Oracle, I was probably one of the only VPs I knew that actually took 2 weeks off a year at minimum to go somewhere. Now, yes, I'm still really big on days off. Mind you, I take them more sporadically. It might not be Saturday, Sunday anymore. It might be like Wednesdays. And on those days, I, of course, because I work in crisis management, unless I've handed it off to Mac, I'm on call, but I walk the dogs. I read a lot. I read insane amounts. And of course I play video games, lots and lots of video games.
What's in your queue right now?
So a friend of mine and I have been playing Baldur's Gate together, nice. Because of course, and sometimes though, I don't want to think. So what I do is I turn on the TV to watch like a TV show and then I take out my Switch. So I've played like all the Mario games, Pokemon games. I've played like, I just 100%ed like the last two Pokemon games that came out. So yeah, it's kind of depends on my mood. I, of course, am a huge Diablo fan. So when that came out, I was playing that exclusively until I finished it. But my return to games every time are these two, Bug Snacks,
okay,
which is an indie game by Young Horses, which is incredible. Actually, I've got the little guy up here. This is one of the characters from Bug Snacks.
It's a strawberry?
You can see. Yeah, it's called a Strabby, and you catch these in the game, and he's got googly eyes. It's got a really funny sense of humor. That's a big thing for me, is games that make me laugh. And the other one is from Devolver. It's called Cult of the Lamb.
Okay. Yeah.
And Cult of the Lamb is, imagine you took a dungeon crawler and crossed it with Animal Crossing.
Oh, build your own dungeons?
Well, no, you build your own little village, your cult. You build a cult, and you build them houses, and you build them kitchens and all this stuff. But in order to get resources, you're doing a dungeon crawl.
Oh, okay.
And you go through the dungeon to get the resources for them. Really
That's
twisted.
So on brand.
But also remember that this would be Animal Crossing if you could teach the animals to eat each other. Because like, you can have your cult be a cannibalistic cult. You can have your cult, like, it's incredible. And the game has got a great art, great sense of humor. And it's replayable, which is really great.
Don't give me that much power. I'd be like, you see what I've done for you? I've crawled these dungeons.
Oh, if you gotta, you will love Animal Crossing. You've got to try it. It's on all the platforms. It's on everything. And it was one of the best games to come out the year, won a bunch of awards. It's got a cult-like following. I mean, you can kind of see them in the background behind me over here.
Yeah.
I've got two dice boxes from the game. You know, up in the background somewhere, I've got some of their art. It's just a fun game. And I really love how indie games are really, and I say indie by, I'm being very specific, not the AAA or quadruple A's. So like, AAA's are things like Baldur's Gate,
right?
You know, Halo, Destiny, all that stuff. They're great. They're fun. But the games I go back to and always love the most are these crazy games coming out of these smaller studios.
Sure.
And, you know, just stuff like that. There's a game called Brotato, which is completely ridiculous. That's my husband's go-to vegging out game. But yeah, looking at those little indies, those are where it's at for me.
Those are the kind of games like, you're like, oh, look, only $1 in Steam sale. You never get around to them, but you're saying get around to them. They're actually worth
it. Get around to them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely try Cult of the Lamb.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Sorry.
and lastly, I guess everyone collects something. What do you collect, Anna?
Remind me real quick, is this going to be on video?
Yes.
As well?
Yes.
All right.
Uh-oh. We're getting a visual look at this.
Hold on.
Is that a Lapras?
Those are Vaporeons. Oh, so that used to be a Sphiel. Very round Sphiel, but my dog turned it into a dog bed.
So
you can kind of see I've got the Lapras, but this whole side over where my head is right now.
Yeah.
So over here.
Yeah,
that's all Vaporeons, all the way up.
I was a Jolteon fan, but it's cool. I ain't a hater.
So yeah, you can kind of see as I move the camera over, it's almost all Vaporeons.
That's correct. Can I ask why that one? Because that's Gen 1. So like, why was that one like the one that pulled you the most?
So we have a dog that kind of looks like Evie. She's around here somewhere. You've seen her wandering in the background.
Yeah.
But with the Coast Guard and with how much work I've done in nautical spaces and all the things I do in water spaces, I've always loved. Also, my office, it also happens to be my favorite color scheme, which helps, is the dark blue and the light blue. You can kind of see I've got it everywhere. So that helped too. But my husband also works at Pokemon, so I have an in to get like all the Vaporeons.
Oh yeah. I mean, there you go. I got a Vaporeon plug.
He doesn't, if he goes overseas, he brings me Vaporeons, you know?
I love it. Well, what's funny,
I always have Vaporeons.
my first favorite Pokemon was Electabuzz because in the anime, it was a team of a baseball team. And so I'm a baseball guy, and it's called the Electabuzz. I became an Electabuzz fan, so I totally get that.
Yeah, everyone has their reason and their Pokemon. Like my husband's favorite is Houndoom, and it's because he used to have a dog, like a big dog like that. You know, everyone has their Pokemon, and I think that's pretty cool. Other than that, the only other thing I collect is, well, and this one's a little bit rude. I love, absolutely love handmade mugs. And so I follow a whole lot of ceramic artists. So this is an artist directly here in Washington State. I think she's in Duval.
Okay.
But I have like probably at least a dozen handmade ceramic art mugs because it's usable art and I love it. And I also
why are those killer whales so rude?
Dude, I am here for it. I'm here for it. Although I will tell you, if the whales from over there, like if the orcas from over there teach the Puget Sound orcas how to mess with boats, we are so screwed.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Lock it down. Lock it down. Well, that's nope, pretty cool.
But yeah, so that would be the other thing is ridiculous mugs.
For those of you on the audio version of this podcast, it's a bunch of smiling, happy killer whales who are like, fuck them boats. That's terrible.
Well, and on the bottom, it says organized crime.
That's even worse. They know what they're doing. That's premeditated.
Oh, yeah. They're smart. I love them.
Not a crime of passion.
I mean, I should also admit, though, I should also openly admit that, okay, like, you know how everyone has their happy day movies or movies that when they're sick, they watch?
Oh, yeah.
Or just mine are all movies like Godzilla. And like, I am all about Cocaine Bear. I'm all about watching nature just mess up humanity.
Yeah, I'm going to say
that's, like, that's my happy place movies. So. Oh, that's
it's like, I'm anti-human. I love it.
I will say I do not enjoy like San Andreas or Deepwater Horizon. Like the movies that are about action, like earthquakes or those are a little harder for me because I sit there going, that's not how that works.
Right.
That's not how that works.
You're doing the stats.
But watching Godzilla just protect the earth by smashing, no offense, LA or San Francisco, I'm good with that.
Were you a fan of Rampage? Did you see that, the one?
Oh, love that game. Love that game.
Okay. Have you seen movie was weird, but I like it.
The movie again, though, that's another one I enjoy because it's just dumb fun.
Fair.
Like the most recent Godzilla movie, Godzilla Times Kong, the one that's in theaters right now, is so much fun.
Is it?
Does it make sense? Nah. Is it a blast? Hell yeah.
Okay. Well, the commercial has like WWE commentators talking what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Just trust me. Go in prepared to go. That makes no sense. And I don't even care.
Wow. Well, there you have it. I don't even care. It's a lot of fun to have you on the show there, Anna. Like I learned a lot about what you do and I hope the book comes out. I guess we're all digital and physical copies are sold. How do I go about doing that?
The webpage is fuckitwatchthis.com, FCK, so it's no you.
I was going to say,
how's that? Myself in trouble. Just so I didn't get myself in too much trouble. But by the end of this month, it'll actually be up on Amazon. So that'll be the easiest way to do it. So by the end of this month, it'll be up for digital on Amazon. And then actually, right after I get back from Europe, I start recording the audiobook. So the audiobook will also be available this summer.
Fantastic. And if anyone want to contact you directly or follow you on social media or Blue Sky, well, I guess that's social media as well. How do you go about doing that?
So I don't even remember what am I on Blue Sky. I've got so many different social medias now. Yeah. LinkedIn is always a great way to reach out to me. I'm also on Blue Sky and I'm also on Threads. On Threads, I'm V6 and on Blue Sky, I'm Oceanbound.
Wow. There you go. Thanks so much for your time. I guess I want to get a copy of that book because it sounds pretty much on point. Let me know.
Send me your address. I'll send you a copy.
Let's do it. I really mean that because I love to. Okay. I wanted some more conventional leadership because my dad gave me the 1 minute manager when I was a kid. And I was like, this is old even back then. What are you doing, Pop? You know what I mean?
So, exactly.
Well, let's have another one.
All right. You take care.
Thanks so much for listening to New Amsterdam Radio. Learn more about the show at newamsterdam.com. That's KNEW Amsterdam.com. Until next time, this city is yours.